Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hi, this is Henry Gilroy, co-executive producer of Star Wars Rebels. You're listening to Aggressive Negotiations.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Aggressive Negotiations. I am just one of your hosts here, Jedi Master Matthew Rushing. And with me, as he is always, the inimitable, the fantastic, dare I say, amazing, John Mills.
Wow. Those are some really awesome adjectives. Thank you, my bearded, inscrutable, and... I can't think of another I word.
That's
illuminated.
Okay.
Illuminated friend, Matthew Rushing.
Oh,
yes, I am,
man.
John Mills. How are
yes.
you, everybody?
I'm doing great. Hopefully everybody else is doing great. And you know what, John, I just want to say hopefully they've all been over to iTunes where they could give us a star rating review, let us know what they think of the show. Help other people find us. That's a great place to do that. Also, it's a great place to just, you know, subscribe and get the episode every week. You know, they can also get the show anywhere they get their podcast. So that's awesome. They can find us on Twitter at the Jedi Masters, or they can also find us with the network Twitter handle, which is at Join Nerd Party. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty, and we're also on the web at thenerdparty.com, which is, if you're over there, you can click contact, and then you can choose a show. You can choose us here at Aggressive Negotiations, and an email will come to John and I if you wanted to talk to us about something or had some thoughts about the show or something you'd like to have us talk about or any of that. We love that kind of stuff. And, you know, last but not least... help other people find the show by just sharing us on social media when we post things or, you know, whether that's on Facebook or Twitter. So, but speaking of Twitter, John, we've been doing these polls, which has been super fun. And we had some pretty big things happen recently. I don't know if you heard about them. Probably didn't because, you know, I mean, we're Jedi Masters, but we don't really follow Star Wars.
No, not too much. We're busy cloistered up in
so
the temple.
I wanted to ask you about what the results of our poll. We, you know, J.J. Abrams officially going to be the new director of Episode 9. It's been pushed back to December of 2019, if I recall correctly.
Yes, it has been pushed back.
We have another December release, which is great. I love Star Wars at Christmas. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
So we asked everybody, you know, what their feelings were about JJ directing. 36% of people said yes in all capitals with an exclamation point. 30% of people said okay. 21% said no. And then 13% said they're not sure. So I just wanted to ask you what you thought this kind of means for where the fandom is with JJ coming back.
I really think that the split nature of the poll, you know, we have yes and okay are our predominant answers. I think that the no is inevitable. I think that the not sure is a lot of people who have likely, they really enjoyed The Force Awakens when it came out, but it hasn't stood up for them as well as they expected. I think that the overall vibe is very much affected by the fact that it's 1 week after, you know, we find out 1 week after Trevorrow's firing. And, you know, it really does, even though Abrams is a known quantity, even though Abrams has kicked off the whole series, it's still hard on the heels of them changing direction again with something. And I can't help but feel that that really tempers people's optimism about things, because it doesn't necessarily allay the sense that what people have been afraid of the whole time, of too many safe choices, as it were. And I think that there are even people who support Abrams there are those of us who remember Into Darkness and our displeasure with some of the decisions in it. And so there's a little bit of nervousness because this is going to be the first, isn't this the first time since Into Darkness where he's going to do a sequel to one of his own works? I think so.
Well, and something that we've talked about this, obviously, behind the scenes. And one of the things that you did point out that's very interesting, that the way that this differs from Into Darkness is that he's not following up himself. He's following up someone else who may have changed the game from where maybe he thought he would go. Now, which is most interesting because they didn't have anything planned. You know, JJ didn't even know who Ray's parents were. You know, like this isn't stuff that they had planned out.
Right.
So this is what makes all of this so interesting. And so now he's going to have to play off of somebody else. And I think, you know, maybe that will change the course of it. I don't know. But I mean, I'm right there with you. I'm not necessarily like thrilled that it's JJ. I was hoping for somebody different to come in.
As was I. I really did want somebody different. But I think the one positive here is that we know that Abrams and Johnson worked well enough together for Abrams to have made some changes in The Force Awakens so that things would go the way that Johnson wanted them to go. So obviously they've already worked together. They're bringing in Chris Terrio, who it would be very easy for me to take a pot shot about Batman versus Superman, but based on his work on Argo, I would say, and the fact that there, you know, the writing was not, you know, I wouldn't lay it at his feet the problems I had with Batman versus Superman, and I really loved Argo. So I would say that bringing him on board actually makes me think along the lines of there are going to be a lot of really good and productive story meetings because you have somebody who's a really strong writer sitting down with a director who's done one of these before, who is very conscious of the criticisms that he got about some of the plot points he brought into The Force Awakens. So I think that that actually, you know, it'll be very interesting to see Abrams apply the criticisms that he got and avoid some of the traps that, I mean, you know, it's too easy for people to start making jokes about, oh, well, we're going to get another Death Star, and oh, we're going to get this, and oh, it's going to be just like this. I think that there, you know, the writer's room is going to be pretty solid for episode 9.
Well, and you know this, but I mean, I love Batman v Superman, and I have no problem with that. You know, Terrio also did Justice League, and I know for both of those that he was extensive in his research into the comics about, you know, just the smallest minute details about things. Like in Justice League, he's even done research into things like electricity for the Flash and that kind of stuff. Like he's really getting in depth about things, which is awesome, you know. And so if he's going to do that same thing and really dig into Star Wars like that, that would be fantastic, you know. So I think for me, JJ is the thing that I'm kind of least excited about coming back for 9, but Terrio as a writer is the thing I'm most excited about. And so maybe those two things together can create a movie that I will be very excited about. So,
I think I said this, you know, we were talking off air about this, but J.J. Abrams becomes the one director besides George Lucas to direct more than one Star Wars film.
That's very true.
And he is likely going to be the only person besides George Lucas to direct more than one Star Wars film, I would imagine.
That's a crazy thought.
And I will also say, just as a final thing, whatever problems anybody might have had with The Force Awakens, the characters that he brought, you know, Finn, Rey, Poe, were pretty great. BB-8 was a pretty great creation. And at the very least, The Force Awakens is an incredibly well put together, great looking film. So we know at the very least it's going to look and move really well.
It'll be faster and more intense.
Yes. So. Well, yes. We know that there's going to be, they're going to be running a lot more again.
Yes, there's going to be a lot of running and a lot of sweating.
Yeah, panting. There's definitely going to be an uptick in panting.
Well, the last interesting poll, and this was a question that you had thought of, and I thought it was great, because it's something that I've kind of been wondering about. And we asked if Disney should continue to make the episodes after episode 9, or if that should be the last one. And so the two choices were yes and no, standalones only. And pretty close in this poll, 55% said yes, but 45% said no, standalones only.
It's a pretty close split there, man.
Yeah. That kind of looks like, you know, a lot of presidential elections there. kind of wondering, do you think that means that people just don't have any kind of clue as to where they could go? The episodes tend to be the Skywalker saga. So do you think people are just like, I'm kind of done with the Skywalker saga after 9? Or do you think it's just that, people are really most interested in seeing what kind of craziness that they could come up with, you know, a standalone?
I think that there is a sense that, look, full disclosure, I voted no standalones only, specifically because I view the episodes through the light of the Skywalker saga. Or at the very least, if they're going to move down a road of, if you look at the standalones they're doing right now, for sure, you know, we got Han Solo in production and we've gotten Rogue One. And that's been sort of a nudge away of telling stories of non-Force users. I think that if they draw a line, and it doesn't necessarily need to be the Skywalkers, where the episodes are the big fairy tale ones with wizards and laser swords, and then the other stories tie into them, and you have Vader show up in Rogue One and stuff like that, but they tie into them, but they aren't the same thing. That, I think, stays with the mission statement that seemed to be what Disney said they were going to do, which was episodes are this thing and standalones are this thing. Okay, cool. You know, I think if they're going to continue doing episodes, and let me get your feedback on this, it would seem to me that they should make sure that they're always going to be the magic stories. They need to make them. Why should they be episodes? What makes those stories different from the other ones we're seeing?
Yes, I absolutely agree in that. I actually voted no as well, because I just feel as though the problem with dragging any story out too long is that you run the risk of that every time you add more to the story, all that you can do is ruin what came before by changing the meaning of it too much. The end of it can totally mean something different in light of the new material. And that's a really dangerous place to be, especially when we're talking about Star Wars. I don't know how you can continue to really come up with those, as you said, kind of like magic stories where it's just like, this is a story that has to be an episode. I don't know how you do that. And whereas I do feel like there's plenty of opportunities, and we even talked about it on the show, the genres that you could do just a couple episodes, though. I think there's plenty of that there. So that's not something that worries me. It becomes the episodes that are the places where I'm like, this has to be your darn tootinest best story for it to fit within, you know, the Skywalker saga.
Yeah. And tip of the hat to some people that interacted with us on Twitter about it, where we eventually got to the point of episode 10 family reunion. We find out that Shmi's distant relations come together from throughout the galaxy. We have a big Skywalker barbecue.
It's like the new holiday special.
Hey, yeah. Yeah, put it around like that. Writes itself.
Lots of blue milk served, some weird enchilada thing, you know.
Porg. A porg enchilada.
Oh, man, there is nothing better than a porg roasting on an open
there
fire.
There you go. Mm, oh, yeah, so Life Day. Delicious. There you go. Porgs roasting on a... See, you see, this all comes together, man.
Which, you know, I have written lyrics to a Life Day carol that I may throw up on the Nerd Party Network blog. So
I say go for it. I say absolutely go for it, and then turn off all of your mentions for a good long while afterward.
Absolutely. Yeah. But today we have one more panel for you that I was able to record from DragonCon, and this comes directly from a panel that I was at with Henry Gilroy, and it was just him. And it was a fantastic panel because he was talking about Star Wars comics and animation, and the whole panel was just open to people asking questions. And he did his best to just answer those questions. And it was phenomenal to sit down with a guy who, you know, has learned from George how to make Star Wars, a lot like Dave. You know, they worked on the Clone Wars together. And then, of course, he's gone on with Dave to create Rebels and really just get to sit there and kind of pick his brain about things. It was fantastic. So we talk. There will be questions about comics. There will be questions about Clone Wars. There's questions about Rebels, of course. And so I hope that you will all enjoy this panel as much as I did getting to sit there and just listen to Henry talk about Star Wars. But before we go, John, and we get out of here and let everybody enjoy the panel, where can everybody find you if they want to talk about some things or they want to, you know, bat back and forth ideas that, you know, in more family reunions or, you know, what might happen in episode 35?
Oh, well, episode 35. I'm already on episode 36. Come on, keep up, man. You can find me online as Kessel Junkie, of course. You can find me right here on the network co-hosting Great Shot Kid with Mike Schindler, where we are actually embarking on, inspired by your show, Outpost, a chapter-by-chapter reading and discussion of Splinter of the Mind's Eye. You can also find me with Mike Schindler over on the Trek FM network, co-hosting Stage 9, where we look at the works and influences of Star Trek creators. And then you can find me co-hosting Words with Nerds, which is a weekly melee of interesting arguments between me and my pal Craig. So where can people find you, Matt?
Well, you could find me on Twitter as well, MattRushing02. You can also find me on Instagram under that name. I'm here in the network talking, like you said, about Harry Potter with Ray Kaufman. We're walking through the Harry Potter book series chapter by chapter. We're now in The Prisoner of Azkaban, which is my favorite book in the series. I hope that you'll join us. It's a lot of fun. You can also find me on the Trek FM network as well. I am there doing The Orb with Chris Jones, talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine, as well as doing the General Geek Show there, the 602 Club, where we talk about all things geeky. In fact, you'll find John over there and I talking about the latest Star Wars book, Phasma. So you might want to check that out. And then last but not least, I do one more show, and that is called The Cinema Stories. And that is all about film through the lens of faith, and I do that with my friend Courtney. So John, I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time for us to close negotiations and let Henry take over.
Matt, let's let Henry take over.
If you don't know, I started working on Star Wars comics back in the early 90s. Did a bunch of Star Wars Tales. And meanwhile, I was working at Warner Brothers Animation on Batman Animated Series. And also other series. I worked on Animaniacs somewhat. So right around 99, I think. No, it was actually 97. George Lucas basically started work on The Phantom Menace. And they were looking for somebody who had a film sensibility, but who had also written Star Wars comics to adapt the prequels into comic book form. And George said, "Oh, this guy, get this guy, because you know he does both cinema and he does comics. So we need somebody to kind of blend it." So I remember getting the first script for The Phantom Menace, like FedEx to me special, and I was so paranoid about having it, whenever I left the house, I hid it in the rafters underneath the fiberglass. And then I heard that fans were trying to figure out where I lived because I was working on the thing, and I was completely paranoid. So I also worked on adaptation for the second prequel, Attack of the Clones, which I don't have an overhead, but it was titled Episode 2, Star Wars Episode 2, Jar Jar's Big Adventure. And the draft I got was subtitled The Golden Rod Draft. So I thought it was really funny. It was a much later thing, but that's what I did the adaptation on, basically. I was working from George's screenplays to turn those into comic book form, the first two. So that was kind of kept me busy through 2002. In the meantime, I was at Walt Disney Television Animation. I was working on Lilo and Stitch, Buzz Lightyear, and the House of Mouse animation. And then in 2004, I was working on Super Robot, Hyperforce Go. That was a really fun show, sort of a, you know, take on Voltron. And then I got a call to, hey, George wants to do his own animated series. So, which was really exciting. And it was going to be based on the Clone Wars. He wanted to kind of, he saw how well the Clone Wars animated series that Gendy had done. And that was really sort of a toy vehicle. And I think Gendy did a great job, but George wanted to do something bigger, more wider, sprawling. And so that's how Dave and I got, you know, together on it. I'd actually known Dave Filoni a few years earlier. He was working on a show called Timo Supremo at Disney, and I worked on it as a writer in some capacity, and he was a storyboard guy. So anyway, from 2005, I got the job again. George read some of my stuff and said, hey, this guy knows how to make Star Wars. But I didn't really. He was really more concerned with teaching us how to make Star Wars. And that's how I started on Clone Wars. So I was on Clone Wars 2005 to 2007. Let's see, I can answer any weird questions you have about that. And then I got a call back in 2013 to work on Rebels. And so I've been on Rebels for the last 4 years. Wow. So. Yes, I was going to say, this is about you guys. So I got, yeah, raise your hand, ask me any question.
Point you out.
I'm sorry, I missed that. Can we get him a microphone?
So when Hale is flying the X-Wing, well, when the X-Wings blow up in Hull Squadron?
Ooh, that's a good question. It's a tough one. In case you didn't hear, he was asking in Hera's Squadron, which is teased in the season 4 trailer, will one of her X-Wings blow up?
Yeah.
I think you might have to tune in.
Find out. Not the one that she's in.
No, I ain't talking about.
Wait a minute, how do you know that? Have you seen something?
Lego Freemaker Adventures.
Okay, all right, dang it, okay. Well, you can still get shot down, not necessarily die, right?
Sure, it's true. You watch G.I. Joe, everybody's
yeah. That's right, there's parachutes. There's sadly no parachutes in Star Wars. Although, I should add, and you probably heard this story from Dave, when the special editions were coming out, Revenge of the Sith, Dave was trying to talk George into, like, animating Plo with a parachute coming down after he had been shot down. He's like, yeah, yeah. And then George's like, you know, that's a great idea. Do that. And then you know what's going to happen? Then his ship's going to land on top of him. And then a building's going to fall. Because he knows that Dave loves Plo. So. Sorry, my bad in George impersonation.
This gentleman here.
I think we all have bad George impersonation. Or Dave impersonation.
I can't do that. Wait, you need to do Dave for me.
I don't know.
That is so good. I gotta work on that.
Yeah. I can really tell you.
I gotta stake my cowboy hat.
working on the Clone Wars, obviously a big deal for you guys. What was, you know, you talked about learning to make Star Wars, like George teaching. And sure. What do you feel like was the most important lesson that you learned about making Star Wars from the master?
You know, his sensibility changes. I think as you mature as an artist, your sensibility changes. And I think early on, he, you know, and I think Dave probably said this, George's big thing was dare to be goofy. But he would also say dare to be great. When we first met with him, he said, you know, I'm retired, I'm done, I might see you guys once every couple months, but you're just going to make the show. And
And then our initial test that we did was Yoda doing on a walk cycle, and he walked in from the shadows into a beam of light. And George saw that and said, you guys are not making a cartoon, you're making cinema. Now, in our minds, we weren't making a cartoon, we were making Star Wars. And so, if anything, George was always there to challenge us to make it bigger and better all the time. And as far as that goes, I think Star Wars can be anything. And as you watch the Clone Wars, there are stories that are war stories, there are stories that are horror stories, westerns, comedies, political thrillers, that kind of thing. So I think that's anything. I think where a lot of people get wrapped up, no, Star Wars is this particular thing, but really Star Wars mines all of cinema. And George has this love affair with the cinema, and that's really kind of what he kind of put into it. So yeah, and also he would just make fun of how nerdy we were. You know, I go, well, actually, you know, her name is, Lou and Luminara and Dooley. And he's like, no, I'm just calling her Luminara. And I go, well, I know, but shouldn't she refer to as Master and Dari? He's like, no, we'll call her Master Luminara. I was like, okay. And he's like, don't pay attention to that stuff. It's written all by some guy in London, those guidebooks. I don't know. It's like, actually, I know the guy. He works down the hall, but it's okay. Sure.
To be clear, I am not asking for the answer to the question.
Oh my gosh.
But does Dave have any plan? Do you know if Dave has any plans to tell us what the hell happened to Ahsoka?
Are there any plans for what happened to Ahsoka? I don't know.
Not for what happened to her. Does Dave have any plans about ever telling us?
I can't tell you that. You know what? Your best bet is to say, go on Twitter and say, at HGilroy67 told me to ask you. So because he's not here, he's in Toronto, I'm punting the ball 500 miles north. So,
I thought he did at Celebration. Yeah. With the charity.
Yeah, he did right. Yeah. He went the he did the
question mark to exclamation
right.
Mark.
Went, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, that says a lot. That says more than I can say, I think. But I'll just say this: where I think, there's a lot of fantastic Star Wars material coming, and I don't think you're going to be disappointed by, all sorts of stuff that's coming down the pike.
Is there going to be any more special cameos of characters from Clone Wars and Rebels in any of the future Star Wars movies?
That's a good question, and to answer it, I honestly don't know. And even if I did know, I couldn't tell you. So, like I was saying, there's the movies coming down the pike. We're finishing up Rebels this year. There's some fantastic games. There's two novels I think that were released last night. So there's a wealth of. It's a great time to be a Star Wars fan. And anyway.
So let's talk about Clone Wars, because I think you can talk about that. You were on the staff for the whole run, I understand. Uh-huh. But when you started it, was there a sense the show's going to go for 5 seasons, 6 seasons, and then stop? Or is it just going to continue indefinitely? Because it definitely set up a lot of plot threads that were not able to resolve when the show was canceled. And since at that time, we didn't know that the sequels would be coming out and it would be cut short, was there a sense that, we can continue these stories indefinitely? Because for me, it seemed like there was so much happening in that show. It could have happened possibly in that short span of the Clone Wars. There was so much going on.
Yeah, that's a really great question about, did we expect, Clone Wars to be a short or long? I mean, I think coming from television animation and Hollywood, most episode seasons, whether it's Kim Possible, Lilo and Stitch, or even Avatar, they have a run set. They want to syndicate it. So that number for Europe is 39, but we tended to do 52 in the U.S. And then some series got a 65 run. So honestly, Dave and I figured, okay, we're going to do 65 episodes. Let's make them as great as we can. Keep in mind, at that time, we were building the pipeline for how we were going to make. There was no Lucasfilm animation. I mean, we were actually creating it with the show. So that was really challenging in and of itself. However, early on in one of our meetings with George Story meetings, like, you know, I'm gonna make, we're gonna make 100 of these, you know. And Dave and I are like, what? Like, that's 40 more than you would expect. And he meant it, because he fell in love with the show and making the show. He, you know, to have the guy who created something be the last word on how you execute it is really like a unique situation. So we would just keep on making them, keep on making them. And I know, you know, the crew who was making Clone Wars at the time, they fully intended to just keep going. You know, I don't know. Do you know how many seasons? I'm not sure this was.
Well, it went public. 5 and then the 6.
Right. There's a 6 on Netflix. After I just mean after. Yeah. After 7 and 8, right?
I think Dave had at least 7 seasons.
7.
And
yeah.
But they had kind of.
They had scripts.
Out.
Scripts
yeah.
through
yeah.
7, yeah. I think, yeah. And I know you guys have seen probably some of the animatics yeah. with the voice actors. Yeah. Okay.
All the way in the back.
So I want to say what we all know is Rebels is absolutely fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Like, so you have this influence of George Lucas, even if he's not in the room with you guys on Clone Wars. And then flash forward to Rebels. What's it like without him around, you know, influencing you guys?
Boy, it's a completely different thing, because you have the story group, but they're very supportive, and I think that's one reason why I was brought back onto Rebels, because I think people go like, oh yeah, I know how to make Star Wars, and you know, people at Disney were very excited, we're going to make Star Wars, but then it's like, oh yeah, how do you do that? How do you do it without every character saying, I got a bad feeling about this? These are not the blank you're looking for. It's like, that stuff kind of gets old, and George really wanted, like, I did all that. Like, come up with new stuff. So I think, for me, I didn't change the way I wrote. It was for, like, hey, Henry, come in and, like, basically bring your experience. And I had a really great working relationship with Dave when it came to that. You know, he's like the guru of Star Wars animation. So when they brought me back in, it was like, oh, okay, this is a comfortable fit. These guys know what they're doing. So that was really it. I think there's a lot of trust. And Disney really stood behind us. Obviously, there's tonal differences from Clone Wars to Rebels, but I honestly never tried to think about that. If anything, we tried to bring some of the lighter tone from the original trilogy, specifically because I think that lended itself to, you know, what Disney wanted. But also, I think there's, like we were saying before, Star Wars can be anything. It can be lighter and funnier. But also, as you guys saw with all the murdered Inquisitors and Darth Maul slashing Kanan's eyeballs out, we didn't completely kiddify it. Sure.
I was just curious, when you guys started the whole process of doing the Clone Wars show, did anyone that was involved with that, were they involved with the prior Clone Wars game that was out in the early 2000s as far as story? Did you guys just totally take everything that happened in that and scrap it? Did you draw any influences from it? Was there any
Yeah, I mean, if you just see the Clone Wars game, or are you talking about Gandhi's series?
On every platform after the movie came out, that took place right after the events of the Battle of Geonosis. Dark Reaper and all that stuff.
Oh, right. No, not really. Yeah. I mean, and just so you're aware, and I think Dave said this before, there's the, back then there was the George's canon or continuity. In his mind, those were the films, and then what he was working on story directly, which was the television series, Clone Wars series. The games, the novels, the comics at that point did not necessarily have to tie in. So George wanted to say, like, yeah, don't, that's why he made fun of me about, like, the guidebooks or whatever, because he's like, that stuff is not as important as what, like, he sees it as. So, that, I mean, I understand, like, you know, when it came to, you know, like, the Legends, definitely, and the Expanded Universe, we drew on that as much as we could, making the Clone Wars. And the same thing with Rebels. We wanted to bring all that stuff we all love, whether it's a ship or a character, every time we could, we would.
I'd say the past season, my favorite nod, because I'm an old man, was playing Dark Forces when I was 15. And the Dark Trooper was in the Imperial ships. I was like, those things haunted me when I was 14, 15. Because you couldn't kill them.
Yeah, they're terror. Yeah, they're the Terminator, basically.
Yeah, basically.
They're really fun.
Yeah.
Did the fact that the Clone Wars was canceled prematurely affect the fact that Rebels is only going to be 4 seasons, or was it just trying to fit it in between Sith and
No, I think that it's... I think it just came time to end the story. When you're developing something, and you know, I think we've all known shows like that continue on, they continue on. And I think it was more about like, wait, you know, this part of the story is ending, just like one of the movies, that part of the story is ending, and then the next part of the story will start. And you might have to wait a while for it to start, but sometimes that anticipation is really makes it worthwhile. Versus, I don't know, we like to think about ourselves as, I don't know what your favorite burger place is around here. Out west, is we have In-N-Out Burger. You might have heard about it. Okay, we like to think of the Star Wars movies as like Thanksgiving dinner, where you get this massive feast, and it's like, oh, it's all the stuff. You love the cranberry sauce and the stuffing and all that. We like to think of Rebels as like the In-N-Out Burger you get every week, and it's delicious and it's fantastic, but it kind of tides you over until you get to Thanksgiving. So, but we also know that there's no shortage of great stories to tell in the Star Wars universe. So, ending Rebels was really about, wow, this so much material has been created already in this time frame. There's probably other areas to explore and new characters to meet. Does that answer your question?
It does, yeah.
Okay.
Gentlemen, Star Wars hat.
Go ahead. You're the pointer. Sorry. Go ahead.
So thanks for coming back to DragonCon.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So I know the Bendu is Freddie Prinze Jr. said he was your favorite character and all that sort of thing. I was wondering if you could get into kind of what was the inspiration for the philosophical or genre or
Yeah. The Bendu originally came from Dave's love of Gamera and Turtles, I think. However, he's sort of a combination of the rock biter character from the Neverending Story. So there's that. I don't know, they call the nickname the Space Moose. You've probably heard that. Okay. So yeah, originally, and I can probably tell you this, originally to end season two, the Ghost crew crashed the Ghost in the top of this coral structure. And they're like, oh my gosh, it's crammed into structure, this massive kind of tree coral thing. And they get out of the ship and they're trying to look around to find like water, basic supplies. So they're stranded on this planet. And they come back to the Ghost, and its Ghost is gone. And so is the giant tree structure. So they have to track down wherever this, they didn't realize that this, they crashed on the back of this huge creature. And then the more we developed the story, we thought, wow, this would be a really great opportunity to develop a new character who has a deep connection to the Force, who has a mystical aspect we haven't seen before. And that was really, I think, you know, we've already done Yoda in the series, so we really wanted to expand as much as we could into, gosh, there are other Force sensitive creatures who are very powerful but not necessarily aligned to the dark side or the light side, because as we know, the Bendu is the one in the middle, and I think that's an interesting concept in and of itself. Yes, sir. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm going to point.
I don't want to
point
you. Point at someone. Okay. The gentleman with no glasses. Can you give me your hand? Yeah.
Are there any plot threads in Clone Wars that you wish you could have ended that you couldn't end in Rebels?
Wow, that's an interesting thing. I think that you're so in touch with the characters and kind of take ownership of the characters, and there's places you want to see them go, but I think that we've kind of been, I think sometimes it's actually kind of more satisfying. If you'd gotten to season, let's just say season 8 of Clone Wars, and that was an episode where Rex got shot and killed, and you would mourn him and be really sad about that. Actually, I'm really glad that that didn't happen, because we got to bring him into Rebels, and he's a great character in Rebels. So part of me is going, oh yeah, there's stories I think you can tell in Clone Wars more, but I think what's coming up is just as exciting, you know? That answer? Just so you know, you got a Batman shirt on, there's not going to be a Batman Clone Wars cross. I know, sorry.
Well, are we going to ever see the Battle of Mandalore, the final thing?
That's a great question. And I don't know the answer. I know that there's a lot of fans just like yourself who want to see it. So
yeah, it could be a moot.
That's great. Can you send a tweet to Dave Filoni and say, "Hey, where's my Mandalore War story movie?" I would love to be part of that.
While going into Rebels, was one of the first things, but I can't speak today. While going into Rebels, was it always your intention to bring back characters from the Clone Wars, such as Rex and Ahsoka, back into the series, or was that just like a thing that like you guys got a bunch of messages from fans and just like gave them to you?
I think it was always our intention too, because we love those characters, you know. I mean, Dave and I were in the room when George said, "Oh yeah, you know, we're gonna basically, you know, give, you know, someone a Padawan." And we always assumed, "Oh, well, the Padawan will be Obi-Wan's because Anakin's a Jedi Knight." And George's like, "No. The Padawan has to be for Anakin." And we were like, "What?" In our mind, for Rebels, we just wanted to basically, "Hey, here's some beloved characters. That we know from Clone Wars survived." Let's see who they are, where they've been, what are they doing. But also, we really wanted to bridge the original trilogy with the prequels. And by having those characters appear in that time period, there is a more natural transition between the two stories that George created. So that was a big goal of ours, was to say, hey, these two time periods are connected and the characters are connected.
Actually, to bring things around to comic books, because
sure.
I started in film and did comic books, which is exactly what I'm doing.
Oh, awesome.
I started out in film school and doing film ages ago, and now I want to do comic books. I've written lots of scripts for movies and for short films and things, but I'll admit, comic book translation from visual storytelling is a whole new challenge. Can you talk a little bit about how you kind of attack that?
Yeah, probably start when I'm 5 years old and I started reading comic books. I actually started an editorial. I didn't take a lot of writers take the literary kind of route to become writers. I started with photography. I couldn't draw very well, but I started with photography, and then I actually started making cinema in the editorial department at Warner Brothers Animation. And my first script I sold was on the Batman animated series to, you know, new producers Bruce Timm and Eric Adamski, mostly because every day I would basically take a bunch of premises and shove them under their door, and they're finally like, okay, the editor wants to write. So I learned how to tell story visually more so than I think literary, and that's why, you know, film and comics are both this visual medium that we absorb. So for me, it's really about pacing. If you have a story and turning that into the pictures is the important thing. Obviously, if you're writing a screenplay, whether it's for animation, whatever, you're basically creating a blueprint for the director. He's the one who's going to execute it visually. So, and it's the same thing for a comic book artist. The artist is going to take your words and turn them into visuals on the page. So as far as the difference, it's really about how much information you can get on a page. I'll tell you a story. On Attack of the Clones, I had finished writing the script for it and finished describing all the action, and then I got a call from Lucasfilm saying, "Oh yeah, George just added a little sequence. You might want to like put it in there." And I was like, "What sequence?" "Oh, it's like a 15-minute chase through this droid factory with R2 and C-3PO." And I'm like, "What?" "You have one page to tell that part of the story." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, there's a lot of stuff happens in that, you know." So I think I begged Dark Horse to give me 4 more pages to kind of expand out. So that's something that happens a lot, and even when we do a Rebels episode, that script, that final script, really is the blueprint. And then after the directors and Dave have their what they call the launch, they'll go through the script, figure out how they're going to execute stuff, and even change some action in the middle of that room. They'll send it back, go, "Oh yeah, we're going to change this," then I'll revise that script, and then we revise the script in editorial. So the film is always like a living, breathing thing. Comics, usually far fewer people are involved in it. So if you're working close with an artist, I would say your best bet is to get to know your artist, whoever is illustrating your book.
I know them very intimately. It's
great. Yeah, the arguments you must have.
No, let me tell you.
So, all the way in the back.
The Zygerian slave arc, remind me again, was that originally a comic that was converted into a script, or first script and into a comic?
For what?
The Zygerian slave arc.
Oh, that actually was a premise that I pitched for season 2 of Clone Wars, and the producer said, "No, this is impossible. There's no way you can do this." And so Dark Horse said, "Hey, why don't you come and work on some Clone Wars comics?" I was like, "Oh yeah, here's a story that was too big to do." I did it in the comics, and George saw it. I was like, "Well, how come we never did this?" And the producer, I think she just did not answer him. Because, like, you know, she would be get Count Dooku'd or something. So, so Dave called me one day and just like, "Yeah, George saw your comics. Thanks a lot. Now I have to produce this." So George basically said, "Yeah, just take the comics as they are and adapt them to scripts, and we'll do it." So it's sort of the premise was going to be in the series, but it stopped, and then the comic was made. George saw the comic, liked the comic, and then we made it as the animated series. That was season 4, I think.
I know probably most of us in here were really glad to see Thrawn pulled back into canon. And I know you can't answer directly, but
why are you asking me that?
But from your own personal headcanon, who would you like to see pulled back into canon from the extended universe? If you could pick some characters. Oh
my gosh. I always like Dash. Yeah, you're right there? Okay. Let's see. A lot of those characters ended up, you know, in Clone Wars. You know, like Voss, you know, Ventress. Those are two of my favorites, and I thought we really had a great time bringing those characters in. So if I was to say my wish list, it's really short, you know. I had wondered about how we could bring Starkiller in, you know, at some point, but I think when a character has such a strong presence in a different medium, it's sometimes difficult to adapt him and still keep. Like even Dirge. Dirge was a character who we originally actually were going to make a human, but that character became Cad Bane. I don't know if you're aware of that. So Dirge was like, "Oh yeah, this is a fun character that we know the fans like. And he makes a great enemy, a great foe for the Jedi. Let's bring him in." But then George's like, "No, I want to make this guy a Western, like, you know, angel eyes, shoots people."
Were there any things that George maybe mixed or didn't want to do that when you guys then started Rebels, you're like, "We love Dad, but Dad's not in the room anymore. We can."
I feel like. That's something actually, to be honest, Dave and I discuss all the time about trying to keep it in line with George's creation. And really, that's why he taught us to make it, and it's why I was working on the show, was I'm going to approach it from George's point of view. There's some, you know, I guess you could say nerdy things, you know. But even George wanted to do the Night Sisters. He liked that. He would look through the comics and just say, "Oh, that's an interesting idea. Let's bring it in. We'll figure out how to make it part of the series." So, I'm trying to rack my brain to think, but I think we got to do it. I like your shirts, by the way. They're very tasteful. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
The answer is no.
Has there been a story that you've still had in your head or on a script that you've been able to pitch but not actually been able to produce? Was it too big for the series, or I just haven't had an outlet for you yet?
I think we always do that. I think all of our stories end up being bigger because we want them to be epic in scope. And that's something that actually I think is one of the great successes of Rebels, where Clone Wars jumped around a lot. You never knew what you were going to get. You know, "Oh, here's the droids arc. Oh, here's the Mandalorian arc." So you didn't know which characters were going to be involved. And I think that's one of its greatest strengths. On the other hand, Rebels, I think, is really attracted a huge and different audience. Oh, well, it's the same audience, the Star Wars audience, because they love this family. It's the same characters that you're seeing. So that to me was always a great like separation between the two series, but also like ties them together.
Yes. With your connection to the characters in the Clone Wars and things like that, were there ever moments where it was really difficult bringing them into Rebels where you had, obviously you have these characters that you created specifically for Rebels, and then you have these characters that you love. Was there ever moments where it was difficult to kind of balance making sure that we do honor to these Clone Wars characters that we love, but also keep the spotlight on the Rebels who this story really focuses
on? Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know, you could say, like, wow, you know, after season three, you know, the clones are not in season three, you know, a great deal. So I think the idea of this show is really about Ezra, and we're following his ventures, just like, you know, the Clone Wars is the way we originally envisioned it. It was, we know what happens at the end of that, the Clone Wars with Anakin and Obi-Wan. So even though there are stories about them, with them, the Clone Wars is really Ahsoka's story. And that's the way it was envisioned from the beginning, which is there's this young Padawan who like grew up in the temple, and sure, she's been trained, but there's a difference between, you know, being trained in the temple and suddenly being thrust on the front lines of a war in a foreign country or foreign planet that you've never been to. So I think that was really, like, even after I left, a really exciting thing about the way the Clone Wars series evolved and Ahsoka grew up with her audience. So to answer your question, yeah, I think that's always a struggle. That's why, you know, Lando is not a regular on the series. It's because it's not his series.
What's doing Clone Wars and Rebels, what have been your favorite things that you were able to add to the mythos of Star Wars?
Let's see. I wrote... I got another call from Dave. This was in 2008 or something. And he's like, yeah, so I was in a meeting yesterday, and George is smiling at me. And usually when George smiles at Dave, it's like, oh, crap. And he's like, we're going to bring him back Darth Maul. And Dave was like, George, you cut him in half. Like, yes. You know, he lived, and everybody lives, you know. Yeah, Anakin got his hand cut off, so Luke, they lived. Yeah, but he was cut in half.
And that's he's it. Survived.
Exactly. And then he's get some, you know, find a reason for it. Somehow he survived. So Dave called me saying, like, so you're going to write this comic book story. What comic book story? About how Darth Maul surviving cut in half. I'm like, oh, great. It's going to be a short story. It's just, hey, this is what happened to him. And, oh, he ended up on a junk planet. All right. 8 pages. All right. So bringing Darth Maul back was definitely a favorite. I really liked the differences we created between our young, you know, male protagonists and Ezra and Luke, the differences, how these are two very different characters and have different arcs, and you never feel like, oh, this is a retread. You know, I think Sabine's journey has been really fantastic. So people always ask me, well, who's your favorite character? Who's your favorite character? And I go, it depends on the story I'm writing. If I'm writing a story that focuses more on Kanan or Hera, then that's my favorite character at the time. I love them all. With the wreath in the back.
Some of the extended universe canon got kind of shuffled around. Like, you used to have Korriban, and now it's Moriban. Was there a particular reason for things like name changes like that?
I think the Twitter handle is at Pablo Hidalgo or something like that. So if everyone in the room can basically bomb Pablo with some questions like that. That's right. Right, there's Leland as well. I think so much of those are, and I think the way George taught us, don't be concerned about those aspects of the names and all of that. I mean, it's important for continuity's sake, but we didn't worry about it so much as what was the need for the story. So if there was a need to change the name or to use it, but we would also try to draw certain elements that we like Concordon. Like, we wanted to use certain locations that would be at least friendly or pay homage to what had come before. You know, if you're just going to use, create, you can create a new planet sometimes, or, you know, just use an older one. It's so funny that when we first started Clone Wars, George said, first rule number one is, I don't want to go to any of the planets we went to. This is right after the movie. Any of the planets we went to in the movies, none. And the first story he pitches was a Naboo story. So, you know, and I realized, like, oh, wait, and he wanted to do Padme and Jar Jar. And I realized, like, oh, wait, he wants to play with his toys. He had this great affection for his characters, and he wanted to see him. So, I'm sorry, cut. Point.
How is it working with the story group? Are they more kind of just guardrails on the sides, or they kind of set up waypoints and you let you kind of get there?
Yeah, I think
how much is created?
They've been really trusting, I think. I think the idea is you know, for the most part, they're new when it comes to, like, being as part of the universe. And you know, definitely Keri Hart had been around George, you know, and after he brought in Kathleen Kennedy. So there was definitely that strong leadership always, but I think it was more about, for the story group, was making sure that the stories were strong, but also supportive in the way that you were talking about the guardrails. It isn't so much a guardrail so much as they wanted to make sure that we weren't going to be wrecking anything for the future, but also, hey, if we can do something to set up something in the future, then that's something cool. Does that make sense? As far as never a seatbelt. If anything, they were, you know, rocket boosters to help us tell the stories we wanted to tell.
I've heard, like, rumors of, like, you know, Simon working on some of the writing for the standalone, or possibly writing his own standalone movie. But have you had any input on the new movies or any of the standalone stuff coming up?
Me or Simon?
You.
Oh.
Because I've only heard about Simon.
Oh, yeah. I think Simon's a superstar. You know, he's fantastic. Generally speaking, is you know, when you're there and you're working on stuff in a certain time period, you know, you might be, like, consulted or whatever. But for the most part, I'm actually kind of excited that I don't know much about Episode 8 on purpose. And I think that when you're working on one time frame with a certain set of characters, that's actually kind of good for you to be separate from it, because you're not going, like, oh, I'm going to plant a seed here for something. I think some of that stuff can be done visually, but ultimately, you know, like the First Order stormtroopers, if they showed up and, you know, Rebels, you'd be like, what? What's that? That doesn't make sense. And I think part of it is we are really conscious of those details, because that's what really constitutes a world that makes sense. So to answer your question, I can't answer your question.
Okay, this is something I've been wondering for a while. I don't know if you know the answer, but how long after the Battle of Geonosis did the Clone Wars movie take place? Because I was thinking about, like, the fact that Ahsoka was only Anakin's Padawan for less than 3 years.
That's a good question. In our mind, it was pretty quick. It was pretty fast. Like, once, you know, Yoda's at the end, Beyond the Clone Wars has that, it's on all over the galaxy. By the way, that's your fantastic costume. I don't have, you know, again, Pablo Hidalgo, you could probably ask him, but a lot of those times we weren't really conscious of those, and we were making the Clone Wars stories because George would go, oh, let's do this story or let's do that story. And we moved them around in continuity as far as, you know, where they happened. So, yeah, I don't have the exact date, but I know Pablo does.
Gentlemen back. All the back. Use your glasses.
So, Clone Wars and Rebels have two different visual styles. How does that affect, like, how you write the stories or how you tell the stories?
Absolutely. If anything, you know, there's more production challenges, like budgets and that kind of thing, probably for Rebels. where, you know, if George, you know, wanted to go to, you know, three planets an episode, we would go, we'd find a way to make it happen. And I think that's a different kind of storytelling, where you have a wider scope. And I remember actually early on in Clone Wars, a producer said, okay, we're only going to be able to visit one planet, like, per episode. And in the room, George goes, no, we're going to four planets in this episode. And she said, George, we can't do it. She's like, yeah, you're going to do it. So you can't argue with the billionaire across the table. You just can't. So really, I think the challenges were, you know, what we could do, production schedule, that kind of thing. Although I will say, sometimes when you have less to work with, you're able to tell a better story. Like some of our bottle shows, I think, are really good. Like when we did the Malevolence arc, you know, having, you know, Plo stuck with those clones and the escape pod was really compelling. And so that's not a lot of giant stuff you're seeing there, but it's just really interesting to get to know these characters.
Is there a particular episode in either Clone Wars or Star or Rebels that you are proud of?
Let's see. I really liked Shroud of Darkness. In season two, I had a great time with 201 and 200 and 201, 201, 202, where, you know, Vader faced Kanan and Ezra that first time. Gosh, I liked Old Masters a lot too, where we meet the Inquisitor and Kanan for the first time. So yeah, it's hard to choose my favorites because a lot of times it's which one I'm watching. You know, so I don't know. How about you? What's your favorite of mine that I wrote? Okay, Batman. I'm teasing you, but I, you know, people say that like, oh, I like the episode I'm working on right now more so. But there are some that like stick in my head, and the ones that have the most going on emotionally, those are the ones that are probably the most satisfying. But I have to tell you, when I was writing that like early Thrawn stuff, his big kind of speech to Hera and that Hera's Heroes episode was like just a fantastic thrill for me because I would love that character since, you know, as a teenager. I mean, as a baby, I'm not that old.
Did you get to like work with Timothy Zahn in regards to dealing with Thrawn at all?
Actually, you're going to have to come to the Thrawn panel.
Okay,
on Wednesday.
There you go.
Segway. We can talk more about that, but yeah. And again, that would be technically a novel, not comic animation. So you're out of order, sir.
Sorry. Judge finds me in contempt.
Back there.
You go ahead.
Yes. No, this is the worst for me, because you'll notice that somehow I'm wearing the same shirt for 5 months in a row. We record those in batches, and a lot of times I wouldn't get the questions until I was sitting there. And you have to realize, like, I'm getting asked about a season two story that I haven't watched in 4 months. And I'm in the middle of plotting season three and planning for season four. So I go like, oh, what? That's like half time times when they answer me questions, I'm like, well, yeah, what happens in that episode again? Like, but part of it is because I've moved on. The characters are in a completely different place. So I have to kind of go back and go, and I'll try to do my homework, but sometimes, it's basically like, hey, come up here for an hour. We're going to shoot five episodes at one time. So, but if anything, it was actually kind of good for me to go back and like, oh wow, yeah, that's a great episode. I haven't seen that episode in a few months because I'm so far ahead of like the next thing. But I think those questions are usually written by Matt Martin, who's part of the story group now, but he was working on the online. So anyway, to answer your question, I don't know where they come up with the questions. They just figure it out, and then they bombard us at the last second.
That was a gentleman all the way back.
So one of my favorite aspects of the Rebels since season two has been seeing the arc and the evolution of the Rebellion. I think there's a real feel that there are some high stakes there. Given how
I think a lot of it had to do with, I mean, there isn't, we kind of like wanted to kind of lay out some of the pieces in season three, but we didn't want to spoil anything that you might see in Rogue One. And also Rogue One as a film was going through editorial. There was a lot of evolution to the story. And I think and the more you work on it, the better it gets. And we do the same thing on Rebels. So if anything, we just wanted the two timelines to kind of like blend into each other. So there wasn't as much in Rebels season three because we started that way earlier, and the Rogue One movie was later. So we did, you know, what we could, and you know, if you've seen the trailer for season four of Rebels, you know that there's definitely way more coming. So that's the exciting part, I think, is to say, oh yeah, I recognize that ship from the Rogue One, or that character, et cetera, et cetera. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Well, I'm going to see all the Shadow Troopers from Legends. Are they going to ever put the one from 2 Canon?
Shadow Troopers.
The Shadow Troopers. Hmm. That's a good question. You know, I don't know about that. I always think like when I think of the Shadow Troopers, I always think of is that where the Death Troopers came from? I always wondered about that. The Death Troopers from Rogue One, you remember those guys? They had their black suits of armor, and they're like 7 feet tall, all of those guys.
Yeah.
That was a good question. I got something for you. It's a couple book I wrote.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Great question. Now everyone's going to... Okay, here's the thing. If you ask a really good question, maybe if you're wearing a shirt that I'm wearing, maybe you can...
Gentlemen... Yeah, real quick. And then we'll...
Forgive me if I missed something, but were you guys planning on doing some sort of something to show how Ahsoka all of a sudden, I don't know, where she's got two lightsabers? Forgive me if I missed an episode here. So I just remember all of a sudden... Ahsoka's got two lightsabers, the costumes changed a little bit, I think it was the beginning of a new season. Did you guys ever have any sort of plan or story that you wrote that was like, oh yeah, and then she gets two lightsabers?
That's probably how my mind would have worked, but George was like, yeah, now she has two lightsabers. Why? She just has two. Okay. Who cares? Yeah. She needs them. She needed another one. That happened all the time, you know, and I think, oh, why? Because it's cool. But it also, you know, that's the sort of thing when you think about it, oh, it really kind of lends to her fighting style. She's agile, she flips and twists, right? And she's super coordinated, so it makes, you know, more sense.
I say Google all the time. It's something I got real confused
about.
Yeah,
they
look great, so.
How satisfying was it to find, especially given when George said, oh, and by the way, he's around, how satisfying was it to finally kill Darth Maul?
As I said, I think, I don't know, last year, that I had named the season two finale Twilight Apprentice because originally Maul was going to die on Malachor. And when Dave reworked the script, he's like, I don't think he dies. I think we had... Vader cut off his head and his head went rolling down the side of the pyramid.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. Disney! I'm so fired right now. that's always a thing. But I think I don't know, we just had more great stories to tell with him. And as far as I was sort of bittersweet about it, I think, because I thought that Sam Witwer did such a fantastic job bringing Maul to life. Give it up for Sam. Yeah, awesome. And so the character he became in Clone Wars was this really deep, complex character we didn't really ever see in you know, The Phantom Menace. So it was fantastic. So, and I think actually part of me feels that's why George secretly wanted to bring him back. Besides just the bad guy, it's like, oh wait, this character can, you know, we can really do some great service to this character by bringing him back and and he's a real tough guy if he survived being cut in half.
I'll lean back, John.
Since Thrawn is canon again, are you guys planning on touching on the Chiss Ascendancy at all?
That's a good question for Timothy Zahn. But really, I think that, Thrawn is such a compelling character. I know we're going to probably want to do more stuff with him, so I would just say stay tuned, you know. As far as the details, though, I can't answer that.
Throwing back.
I would say yes, but to expand on it is the whole visual development of Rebels is based on Ralph's painting style, I mean there would not be the Star Wars we know without McQuarrie. So, his work continues to inspire, and so that was really like early on in Clone Wars, the way we did some of the textures on the backgrounds, definitely Ralph's influence. Was there, but when we got to Rebels, we were like, well, this is great because we're going to do like a less complicated or less, I want to say, sophisticated design for the Rebels series. It actually kind of lended itself better to McQuarrie's painting style, which were more about graphic shapes and, you know, blocks of color, where there was far more particles and shading and cloth and expensive stuff in Clone Wars.
In Clone Wars of Season 3, in the episode right after Savage Opress showed up, the Delta Squad from the Republic Commando game showed up at the Jedi Temple. Since they appear in that episode, I know that they're part of canon, but does that mean that everything that happened in the Republic Commando game, does that mean that everything that happened in the game is
I would probably say that's a Pablo question. Some details, I think, where characters appear in different situations, you might say, oh, some aspect of that game happened, but maybe not exactly like that, or maybe exactly like that. Actually, you need a comic book for that question. So basically, the reason we're getting a comic book is the answer is, I don't know.
Thank you.
Can we sign that for you?
Yes, sir.
Sign this too. There you go.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Good question. You little troublemaker.
Come on, my bad. I really liked the road that we put Ezra on, I really like Kanan's arc too. This path of redemption of someone who felt he succumbed to fear and ran and has been running, and then at that point in his life turned around and stepped up. I think that's a really great story. I love redemption stories. I love stories about fighting oppression, so those two characters' stories I think are really great. I loved Hera's story. It's hard to say, Anakin's story, so much of it in Clone Wars, we knew his story. And Ahsoka's, coming of age and learning how to become a Jedi I think is great, as is Ezra. So, it's kind of a tie. To me, I think probably because I was around, I did freelance scripts on season 4 of Clone Wars, but most of that arc was created by George and Dave and the
the story guys who are on for 5 and 6. I don't like, but I still love it. I don't dislike it anymore. I think it's fantastic. So, just being part of getting the ball rolling on those on Ahsoka's story was great. But I don't know. I love all the characters and I love all the arcs. I don't know which do you like the best?
Rex, to be honest.
You like Rex? Okay, awesome.
Guys, we got 5 minutes, just so you know, so we're gonna get as many as possible. So.
Just a quick question, and one thank you first for the shows that you've put out. They've been
Oh, phenomenal. You're welcome.
But do you have any regrets on anything that you've done with how either a character ended or would you wanted to take it on a completely different path than what was actually produced?
Let's see. I don't... No, I think there's one DVD where I was humored. It's at the end of the Zygerian arc, where they're going to destroy the big slave prison, and I think I had written it originally that Palpatine said, "Don't," like radioed and said, "Don't destroy that," because we might need it later. And Anakin basically like ignored his note and like blew it up basically. And I think it was like a lot of heated debate about that, because it's like, okay, would he actually defy Palpatine, like who basically is like, you know, his superior, someone like he trusts, right? Where Anakin would be acting out of emotion, saying like, no one's ever gonna be in prison in this place again. So that was one of those, like, probably, you know, I think that the Palpatine call was cut out. So it's basically like, you know, let's just blow this place up because it's a terrible place. And that still works. It's just, in my mind, I always wondered about, is this where you basically plant a seed to Anakin and Palpatine's relationship? Or does it say more about who Anakin is as a person? Anyway, that's one.
The shades back there.
You. So... I was just wondering, maybe you could shed some light on the weird chronological order of some of the episodes.
Confuse me too. I think it's continuity, but a lot of it has to do with, again, George saying, you know, dare to be great, dare to be goofy. Like, there's nothing to say that we aren't actually going to go backward and forward in time and do all sorts of prequels and all of that. You know, I don't know if some of you know, but we originally wrote the Castle of Deception story as a three-parter to start the Clone Wars series. And then George Siana put a prequel on the front of that. So the whole Christophsis battle was something that was added. It was like officially, I think, episode 22 or something like that, and it was put on the front. So that kind of thing, George was really open with being experimental. And, you know, I mean, you guys know with special editions and stuff, he likes to continue to tinker with his, you know, paintings. Like they say, there's two kinds of painters. There's the painter who is never quite done because he keeps touching and fiddling with it, and then you basically have to rip it out of his hands, and then there's the guy who basically finishes the painting and says, I never want to look at this again in my life. So I think he's the former.
Wolfwood, you had a question.
Did you watch the Rebels recon? Will we talk about that?
Oh, sorry, no.
So it's fine. We kind of go into, and there's actually, this is the plug, basically, but the Blu-ray is out, I think, Tuesday. So, yeah, there's a big, like, featurette on how that whole duel came to be. And anyway, just to put it shortly, is we were realizing that, well, we've seen Maul and Obi-Wan fight a lot. Like, you know, saw him already in one of the movies fight, and then we saw him a bunch of times in the Clone Wars fight. So at this point, that battle was all about them they know each other's moves. So it's like there's not going to be any real surprises. So it's just kind of come at me, bro, kind of thing. So that's part of it. So it's why the lead up to the fight is longer than the fight itself, because they're changing stances and readying for like, okay, is he going to come this way or this way? I know this move. I've seen it before. I know what's coming. And part of this has to do with, you know, Maul, he didn't learn anything. He's still coming at it out of vengeance and anger and hatred. And Obi-Wan, at this point, is like, yeah, but I'm not going to react like I did by just charging at you in Phantom Menace. I've learned my lesson. And so you're not going to beat me the way you beat my master. That's basically the story of the battle.
That wraps it up, because that's a good way to end it right there.
Thank you guys.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.